Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Handling the Heat, the podcast by RestaurantEquipment.biz, where we dive into the real stories behind the people powering the food service industry. Today, we're joined by John Hamburger, president of the Franchise Times and one of the most respected voices in restaurant finance. John brings a unique, high-level view of the restaurant landscape, from deal-making and valuations to the operational challenges operators are facing right now. We talk about the state of the industry in 2025, what's driving traffic declines, why delivery has reshaped the economics of dining, and how some brands are managing to grow while others are struggling to keep up. Whether you're running one store or scaling a large chain, this episode is packed with insights on what's changing and what still works. John, thank you so much for coming on Handling the Heat. Very excited to talk to you about how the restaurant industry has been transforming over the last couple of years, given your background. But before we get started here, John, what's something you've eaten recently that you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, well, hi, Zach. Yesterday I had three soft tacos at Taco Bell. My favorite.
What kind of, do you do the Supreme or do you go with just the regular soft tacos there?
Just the regular. Yeah. Awesome. The number three.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. Super excited to get your take on how things have been going in the restaurant industry. Usually in our episodes, we're talking a lot with operators, but from your higher level perspective and, you know, kind of this bird's eye view of how everything's been going, I'm really excited to talk to you about the current state of the restaurant, you know, franchise industry as of 2025. There's been a lot of change economically, a lot of change from the customer perspective, and really excited to get into it. So from your perspective, start you off with an easy question here, John. How would you describe the current state of the restaurant industry in 2025?
Yeah, I would say that the word comes to mind, challenged. And I think that people were expecting coming into 25, you know, after the election, that it would be a rebound year for, you know, sort of restaurant on the deal side, you know, restaurant deals. I think there was optimism that, you know, restaurant sales would improve, same store sales. And what we found is kind of the opposite. It's pretty challenging out there for operators right now. Traffic is soft. I think some of the numbers you're seeing from some of the chains in terms of their traffic is not very good. And, you know, if you look at Wall Street, the Wall Street restaurant analysts now, you know, they haven't been this gloomy. I can't remember when. And so that's, I think, something that's different, that, you know, COVID was very tough, but restaurant operators came out of it pretty good. You know, there was some real optimism, and now traffic is challenged. And that's, you know, there's a lot of reasons we can get into it as to why, you know, restaurant traffic is challenged. And I mean, there's obviously, if you listen to the transcript or you read the transcripts of the conference calls of the public chains, you know, some of their, they call them their low income customers, have dialed back. And in the last quarter, some of the chains even talked about their middle income customers, you know, cutting back. And I think it has a lot to do with pricing. You know, restaurant pricing has been pretty aggressive, and, you know, rightly so. I think, you know, costs, labor, a lot of operating costs have gone up, but I think that the pricing has pushed the envelope with the customer to where, you know, people, you've heard this and I hear it all the time, I can't believe what that meal cost. And I think I think that's what's going on. And so I think people have cut back a little bit. And restaurants, you know, restaurants are one of those disposable expenditures that people can cut back on. And another interesting stat I like to throw out there is that I think it's 25 straight months restaurant pricing has exceeded grocery pricing, and in the last year it's exceeded grocery pricing by a 2-to-1 margin. And so I think people look at that and think, you know, I can make a meal at home, and instead of eating out tonight I'll do something at home. And that's what restaurants are having to deal with. And there's a lot of internal things going on too, you know, with restaurants. There's this kind of this transformation that's taken place, really accelerated during COVID, this digital transformation where, you know, delivery, you know, we call it off-premise, where in-store dining is down. People are either taking it out, they're getting it delivered. You know, catering is on the rise. And I think some chains, Zach, are better able to deal with that. They've got a product that's better for that than other restaurants. Or, you know, other restaurants may have sort of a legacy style of operation where, you know, newer up-and-coming restaurants, you know, they're geared for selling product off-premise. And I think that's caused some disruption. You get a lot of complaints. I hear a lot of complaints from restaurant operators that say third-party delivery isn't profitable for them. You know, they're just trading dollars. They mark it up to kind of cover the DoorDash or Uber Eats commission, but then, you know, you're just the costs involved in that have been high. So there's a lot of issues out there restaurants are dealing with right now.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And let's unpack that a little bit, John, because I think it's interesting to juxtapose the operational challenges, both from a customer perspective and from the internal operations of a company, with you see these massive numbers getting thrown out valuing chains, like, for example, the Jersey Mike's $8 billion sale, right? And then you have all of these other operational challenges that are all encompassing of the restaurant industry. How do you kind of reconcile with, you know, on the day-to-day operational challenges that you're talking about with the, you know, big checkbooks of the people that are finding these operators that are performing well in comparison to maybe their peers?
Well, I think you mentioned Jersey Mike's, and I think there was a recent deal, Dave's Hot Chicken was sold to Rourke Capital. And, you know, these are Jersey Mike's and Dave's Hot Chicken, and a year ago or so, Tropical Smoothie Cafe and Seven Brew. You know, these are pretty high growth, you know, restaurant chains. And so they're paying big dollars, big multiples to buy these. But if you take into consideration the growth that's taking place in these chains, the buyers, think that this is, you know, reasonable. And, you know, a lot of these chains are franchisors. So, you know, if you look at restaurants over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, royalty income of a restaurant chain is valued higher than operating income. And so that's how they get away with paying these high prices for some of these chains. But you're right. You know, it's kind of a tale of two different types of restaurants. You've got restaurants that, you know, you take a restaurant like Noodles or Bloomin' Brands, which owns Outback Steakhouse and Carrabba's. You know, they're trading, and Red Robin, you know, they're trading at really pretty low. It's much lower than it was the last 10 years. And so I just think that people are, again, making a decision about which chains are growing, which chains aren't, which chains are delivering margins, decent margins, which chains aren't. And that's the difference in the valuations.
Yeah. But the issues that you're talking about are seismic, right? They impact the good operators. They impact the, you know, troubled operators. And I think the customer perception of the restaurant is a really interesting point that you brought up. Because when I read the news and I see, you know, a dozen eggs is $10, I'm looking at a McDonald's cheeseburger for $5 and thinking, you know, this is going to be more nutrition, more bang for my buck. But it sounds like those, what the, you know, publicly traded companies are calling lower income customers are not seeing it in that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, this whole thing about the lower income customer, you know, they've been talking about that for, you know, probably 2 years now, it seems, where, hey, we're seeing softness with our lower income consumer. And what's troubling about that to me is that, you know, they define lower income as anyone under 75,000. But, you know, that those are heavy users, have been traditionally heavy users of quick serve restaurants, you know, and then now possibly talking about people under 150,000 cutting back. Well, those are users of, you know, fast casual and casual dining restaurants. And so that is a little bit troubling. You know, it's interesting though. Restaurants have tested and tried this, you know, they call it the barbell strategy. You know, we're going to have lower priced items. You mentioned the $5, you know, double cheeseburger at McDonald's, $5, and you get some nuggets and Coke and a fries. And then, you know, then you've got these higher priced items. What's interesting about that is that when you deliver that, you know, when it gets delivered and it gets marked up and there's delivery fees and there's, you tip, now all of a sudden that's an expensive deal. And I think people are reacting to that. That's one area. And then, but it's interesting, you know, if you take a look at Chili's, for instance, I mean, who would have thought that Chili's would, you know, their same store sales have been up 30% plus, you know, in the last year and a half. Who would have ever thought that a casual dining chain could even conceive of a turnaround and make it work? And so, you know, there's always hope in these restaurant chains that the combination of product and marketing will, you know, turn that around and start to draw some of these customers or increase their frequency.
And that was going to be my next question, is like, what is the out? What is the fix? Because when you see all these issues, but you also see the winners, right? Like Chili's, for example, the brand voice of Chili's, I think, is great, right? Like you see them all over social media, you see their television advertisements and things like that. And it feels cohesive and it, you know, draws you in, even though I've, you know, haven't necessarily been to a Chili's in a while. I think, you know, I've seen it and it's top of mind for me when having these kinds of conversations. But some of the things you can't really fix, which is the pricing, right? Potentially, because food costs, labor costs, you know, the cost of, you know, upkeep and equipment and maintenance and things like that. But what is from your perspective, what are the things that you can change? What are the levers you can pull to bring more people in from all different tranches of, you know, income status?
Well, I think, you know, traditionally what restaurants have done when they get into times like this, when traffic is challenged, is that they discount, you know, they offer value. And, you know, if you use the McDonald's app, for instance, you know, I just saw one the other day, 25% if you make an $8 purchase or more, you get 25% off. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good discount. You know, Subway offers the meal deal. You get a 6-inch and a chips and a drink for $6.99. You know, that's a pretty good deal. You know, Burger King, if you spend the Burger King near my office, if you spend more than a dollar, you get free fries. You know, so that's an example of, hey, how can I try to, during this time, this challenging time, how can I keep traffic, you know, coming in? So they use this value play or discounting to try to do that. In the case of Chili's, which is really interesting, is Chili's, you know, they offered this, I think it's three for me. You get the main item is I believe it's a cheeseburger. I've had it. It's a cheeseburger, fries, drink, and you get a basket of chips. And so the value there, it's $10.99. It's pretty good value. I mean, go to McDonald's and order the top of the line burger, fries, and a drink, and it's, you know, $12.99. You know, how does Chili's do that? And they didn't chintz on it. It's not a 2-ounce burger and a half a slice of cheese. It's really pretty good value. And what they're finding is people are coming in, and not everyone's ordering that. They're ordering, you know, they're ordering drinks, margaritas, they're ordering fajitas, they really worked on training and really worked on making it a good experience when people come in. And those types of restaurant chains, you know, are able to navigate this downturn. I've been through a number of different sort of eras in restaurants where we've seen this traffic challenge. And there's always, it always emerges, You know, the restaurant industry always emerges out of this. And there's, like, you know, there's winners and losers, you know, just like any industry. And I expect that we'll emerge from this, you know, at some point too.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting to me in particular is obviously the discounting strategy, right? Which is almost like the Costco rotisserie chicken of, you know, Chili's, right? You come in, you get, someone gets a burger and chips, but, you know, someone else is getting a Salisbury steak or something like that, which is, you know, a little bit higher in price. But
hey, the biggest non-secret out there is, you know, if you're a Costco member, is the hot dog for $1.50.
Right, right.
I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, right. there are deals out there.
Yeah, you just got to be willing to go and find them. No, definitely.
If you can download an app, you can find them.
Right, and that's a great transition into. So the discounting piece is one of it, but I think what I've seen and what I think is also really interesting is the loyalty programs that are coming from, I guess, strategy of discounting more directly to customers, right? And now, especially with the digital age and, you know, there's the McDonald's app you brought up that, you know, you could get massive discounts, the Burger King app. You have the ability as an operator to put these discounts out there, get more information about your customer, and then bring them in so that you have a more, you know, many more touch points than you maybe would have in the past because of your digital experience that you're building outside of your brick and mortar store.
Yeah. You know, loyalty, there's all kinds of studies that loyalty customers spend more than non-loyalty customers, you know, so that's a reason to do that. And I think a number of chains have kind of struggled with how do we build up our loyalty base without discounting? You know, I think in some brands, discounting has become the way they keep the loyalty customers. You know, you go to McDonald's, you know, and you don't use the app, you're leaving a fair amount of money on the table. Now, is that good for McDonald's? Is it good for the franchisees of McDonald's? Probably not for the franchisees because, you know, it's discounted and free food. But I think operators are kind of, you know, some have figured it out. They're using gaming, you know, try to keep people engaged in loyalty. And it's kind of a work in progress.
Yeah. And especially with all the, you know, development happening on the technology side, you know, who knows what it looks like a year from now, 5 years from now. It could be a totally different experience for that loyalty development.
Well, it does seem to me that, you know, in QSR, people just aren't going into the restaurants. You know, they're choosing to pick it up, use the drive-through, use delivery. You know, get it catered at the office or catered at an event. That's really been interesting how that off-premise number has grown, and that changes everything. I mean, it changes. You know, how do you design the buildings? How big are the parking lots? You know, you have a drive-through at the end of the end cap? So it's a lot of changes that restaurant operators have had to go through to try to figure this all out. How do you price a delivery order? You know, how do you discount a delivery order? You know, these are things that 10, 15 years ago, restaurant operators didn't have to deal with. You know, it's funny, when I got into the restaurant business, the main marketing that it was the 10 o'clock news, you know, the local news. People ran restaurant ads like crazy. And restaurants thought about how do we get more customers? What's our marketing mix? How many weeks of television can we buy and in a market? And today there's so much, you know, you've got social media promotion, you've got some television left, and it's just, and then you're using marketing through the delivery sites. It's just a different deal. It's, you know, you used to be able to figure this out. How much TV can I buy? And now you need an MBA to figure out how to allocate the marketing. It's very difficult right now for chains, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And there's so many different channels too, of like, how are you reaching these people? And you need to make sure that it's a cohesive experience throughout all of those channels to all of your customers or potential customers?
I wrote in a newsletter this month. I said it's turned into like selling soap and toothpaste. You know, it's a numbers game.
Yeah. No. And John, so we've talked a lot about how people are getting into the stores, whether it be off-premise purchases or sitting in, you know, a dining room or whatever else, and the changes that the chains and restaurants are doing in order to facilitate that transition, right? And try to cope with all of these changes in the customer mentality, the customer requirements. How else, from an operational perspective, and again, none of this matters if nobody's walking through the door, delivery person or, you know, actual customer, but how else are chains dealing with the operational challenges that they're going through? Pricing of food, pricing of equipment, the labor shortage and the pricing of labor across the country. What else are you seeing separate and apart from, you know, bringing people in the door? It's like, once they're in the door, how do we make sure we're running an efficient operation?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of trial and error testing that's going on, you know, right now, trying to figure it out. I mean, give you an example. I was talking to the CEO of a small chain the other day, and he's figured out that his off-premise part of the business has been pretty strong. So he's adding drive-throughs where he didn't have drive-throughs, you know, really focusing on the delivery. How do we make money on delivery? And then really trying to build up the catering business, which is kind of a margin enhancer for the whole off-premise. So there's an example of a small chain trying to figure out how to keep a good margin. On the other hand, I talked to an operator the other day who doesn't like delivery. So he doesn't deliver in his stores. He delivers locally. You know, so that's an example. You know, he's willing to deliver locally, you know, sort of in a micro area rather than use the delivery service providers. There's an interesting story I wrote about a month or so ago of an operator in Seattle, a casual dining operator, kind of fine casual dining operator. And, you know, you think of a more difficult place to operate than Seattle, you know, with, you know, rising wages, rising minimum wages. But what this particular operator did is narrowed the number of hours that they were open from just Tuesday to Wednesday evenings, and using the rest of the down hours, you know, lunches and Sundays and Mondays for events, for catering, for special parties, private parties, and was able to turn their business around. So restaurants are really, you know, the thing I've loved about the restaurant business is that they're so entrepreneurial, you know, and trying to figure out how to attract customers and how to make a buck. And, you know, that's what's fun about the industry.
Yeah. And I think the adaptability of a restaurant to be able to, you know, have a party one day, do a catering, you know, event another day, and then, you know, just run regular lunch traffic the day after, I think is a really interesting way of dealing with all these changes that ultimately root from, you know, what does the customer actually want? Like, it doesn't really matter, I guess, what the operators want, because they'd hate people walking through the door.
Right. Yeah, it would be tough to hold a wedding in a Burger King or McDonald's. But yeah.
I'm sure that we've seen something on social media somewhere where someone's doing it.
Someone should try it.
Yeah. Cool. So I guess, John, the other question that I'm curious your perspective on is, we've talked a lot about active operators, right? People that are in business, you know, 1 to 5,000 stores, right? And how they're dealing with the adaptability of it. But the other thing that we've talked to you on this podcast and in my day-to-day work, we see people that are starting up and they have, you know, no footprint. They know that they have an idea. They have the product that they want to put out into the world, and they have what they believe to be a strong potential customer base. How would you, given what you've shared about the overall industry and active operators, think about starting up any kind of, you know, food or bev type of store?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. A number of people that start restaurants, you know, come out of the industry. You know, they've been a server, a bartender, you know, a manager, and so they've had some experience, you know, working in a restaurant. And in those particular cases, I think the odds are a little better for them than, say, someone who's just decided they wanted to be in the restaurant business and they were in the plumbing business or, you know, widget business and decided to get in. You know, a couple things that I would recommend is, one, that they find, advice, you know, an accountant that actually has done restaurants, you know, and understands the restaurant business, that understands the technology, the potential technology that you can employ in a restaurant. I think that would be really important for them to find people around them that have that experience or been successful in that, you know, to ask. It's interesting, you know, you see some growth chains come up and you'll talk to them and, oh, they picked up the phone and they called Howard Schultz, or they picked up the phone and, you know, called Patrick Doyle at Restaurant Brands International. You know, they're not afraid to reach out and ask, you know, for advice. And that's what I would tell someone.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think, you know, in any industry, but in the restaurant business in particular, given all of the fluctuation of the customers and the operational costs and, you know, how to do things efficiently is, you know, it's good to have those kind of mentors around you.
The advice might come back is just stay the hell out of the restaurant.
Yeah. No, and I've heard that advice get thrown around before, but, you know, it's the few that stay that want to, you know that they really want to be there. So the last question, John, that I have is, what do you think, given all these changes, and maybe they're, you know, I feel like I kind of know your answer given your way of describing the fluctuating restaurant business over the past couple of decades. But I'm curious, John, what do you think the kind of next iteration of the restaurant business looks like?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, this is just one of the themes that I've written about in the past, is that, you know, with delivery, with all the digital ordering that's out there, you've taken a restaurant that maybe had its own little trade area, and with delivery, you've extended that trade area. And, you know, there's been a number of different studies. I think NPD and the National Restaurant Association have done these studies of the extension of the trade area. And what that's happened, all of a sudden that trade area expands. It's just like increasing the restaurant base by, you know, 20-30% more units. And so I think that during this period, the next couple of years, we're going to see a settling, you know, a little bit of a shakeout. You're seeing restaurants, chains announcing their closures. You know, Jack in the Box is going to close 200 stores. Red Robin is closing, you know, stores. That's, I think, what you're going to see here over the next couple years as this, you know, we figure out exactly, you know, where the industry's going and how many units we're going to need to satisfy the customer base. So it's going to be, there's going to be some closures, I think, of chains that haven't been able to adapt, either because of their location or their type of business, the type of food they serve. You know, I would expect some angst on some. Now that doesn't mean you know, just yesterday I saw Cava, you know, report, you know, $2.9 million average unit volumes, 25% margins. And where was Cava 10 years ago? You know, it was a fledgling little deal. So there's always opportunity in this industry, you know, right product, right margin, right customer, you know, that's the beauty of the industry.
Awesome. I agree. Well, John, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate your insight. This was a super interesting conversation and excited to see how these restaurants deal and adapt with the never-changing customer needs and requirements across the country.
Yeah, thanks, Zach.